Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you very much. Governor Jesse Ventura's statement that organized religion is a sham and a crutch for weak-minded people is insensitive, insulting, and ignorant. It betrays an attitude of not caring about other people's beliefs and practices. It is a slap in the face of millions of people who have devoted their whole lives to serving God and others. It shows that the former wrestler has not done any amount of scholarly reading and study, even a casual reading of books on religion and morality, would reveal how ignorant the governor is on these matters. By his foolish observation, he has disqualified himself from any position of responsibility. He has brought shame on his state and on the United States of America. When one has examined Jesse Ventura's unreasonable, ungodly, and uncouth statements, he would think that no one in his right mind would bother to defend what the governor said. But tragically, there are people who defend the actions of Adolf Hitler, Benito Mussolini, and Saddam Hussein. I'm not saying that the defender of Jesse Ventura falls into the same category of those who defend Hitler, Mussolini, and Hussein. But I am saying I should not have been surprised that someone would defend the indefensible ravings of Jesse Ventura. The Tennessean, October 17, 1999, printed a letter to the editor with the heading, "Religion is More Than a Sham." The author of the letter says that Governor Ventura's statement about organized religions being a sham is both imprecise and an understatement. He affirmed that it would be comparable to calling communism naughty, a serial killer unkind, or public schools troubled. Religion, organized or not, is worse than a sham. It is evil. Page 22a. I want to examine today the observation that religion, organized or not, is worse than a sham. It is evil. Are there religious people which are evil? Anyone who has taken the time to read the history of religion will have to admit that some religions, both organized and unorganized, are evil. Any church or parachurch group which persecutes those who disagree with it is evil. Millions and millions of people have been oppressed, abused, and even murdered in the name of religion. Churches which use underhanded tactics in converting people are evil. All of us know that some churches or religions have used the sword to bring unwilling people into their folds. Sectarian groups or cults which make virtual slaves of their members are evil. The infamous People's Temple headed by Jim Jones was the very essence of evil. Phil Kearns and Doug Weed's book, People's Temple, People's Tomb, demonstrates conclusively that Jim Jones and other leaders in the People's Temple were demonic in their orientation. The Heaven's Gate cult was thoroughly evil. The staff of the New York Post has given excellent insights into the cult which killed so many people because they had been deceived by Marshall Applewhite. I grieved for the parents and other family members of the ones who died in this fiasco. But people who are deceived by leaders who call themselves Bo and Peep, or T and Doe, did not have their thinking caps on. The New York Post book, Heaven's Gate, Cult Suicide in San Diego, gives some background material on the cult and provides insight into the thinking and behavior of Marshall Applewhite. Incidentally, this dangerous cult had a New Age connection. New Age cults are dangerous and evil. I am not going to discuss whether the FBI or other government agencies acted wisely at Waco, Texas, in connection with the burning of the compound over which David Koresh was the dictator. I do not know if our government made some grievous mistakes. That really does not alter what I am about to say. David Koresh was evil to the core. Of this, I am absolutely sure. If David Koresh were abusing little girls and severely beating children, the government could not stand by and allow that to happen. David Koresh and his cult were in direct violation of the laws of the state of Texas and of the United States of America. David Koresh and his cult were evil. But is all religion evil? Are we as a nation worse morally because most organized religions teach love for one's fellow man, respect for the laws of the land, the sacredness of all human life, compassion for the poor and the downtrodden, and the sanctity of the marriage relationship? Have statements like the following made us an evil people? Learn to do well. Seek justice. Relieve the oppressed. Judge the fatherless. Plead for the widow. Isaiah 1:17. Please listen to the Apostle Paul. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. As we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are of the household of the faith. Galatians 6:10. Look not every man on his own welfare, but every man also on the welfare of others. Philippians 2:4. Are organized religions which teach these great truths making the world better or worse? How would you like to live in a world where these truths were not taught and believed? What the letter writer fails to recognize or chooses to ignore is that some of the most brilliant minds in the world have been devoted to what he and his distinguished theologian from Minnesota called organized religion. Has the author of the letter to the Tennessean ever bothered to read the works of men like George Washington, James Madison, John Adams, Theodore Roosevelt, and other American leaders? Those men and hundreds of other outstanding American leaders strongly supported Christianity, at least their view of Christianity. Dr. H. Wayne House has edited a book which both Jesse Ventura and the letter writer to the Tennessean ought to read. The book has the title, Restoring the Constitution. Is Judicial Activism Destroying the Constitution? One chapter, Restoring the Faith of the Founders, was written by law professor William Stanmeyer. Stanmeyer quotes these words from Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas, a man who was not exactly a raging fundamentalist. We are a religious people whose institutions presuppose a supreme being. When the state encourages religious instruction or cooperates with religious authorities by adjusting the schedule of public events to sectarian needs, it follows the best of our traditions. For it then respects the religious nature of our people and accommodates the public service to their spiritual needs. Page 31. Justice Douglas, a brilliant but liberal judge, did not appear to have thought religion was evil. Thomas Jefferson was not a Christian, nor did he claim to be. He was a deist. In case you have forgotten, a deist believed that God created the world and then allowed it to operate strictly by natural law. Jefferson did not believe in the deity of Christ, the Incarnation, and the other miracles of the Bible. In fact, Jefferson created his own Bible by removing all the miraculous elements from the one God gave. But Thomas Jefferson did not believe that organized religion was a sham. He attended services regularly at the Episcopal Church in Charlottesville, Virginia, drew the plan for the building, and contributed to its erection. While he was president, he made arrangements for the federal government to help build churches among the Indians and in other ways showed his respect for churches. In 1803, President Jefferson approved money for the evangelization of the Kaskaskia Indians. He also approved the money for preaching the gospel to the Wyandot Indians and to the Cherokees. James Madison, the man who wrote the First Amendment, did not believe the government and churches should become too entangled. But he knew the good influence religion has on the minds and lives of human beings. These are the words of James Madison. We have staked the whole future of American civilization, not upon the power of government. Far from it. We have staked the future of all our political institutions upon the capacity of each and all of us to govern ourselves, to control ourselves, to sustain ourselves according to the Ten Commandments of God. Madison's words make one wonder if our current Supreme Court has ever read these words from the man who wrote the First Amendment to our Constitution. Unbelievers often point to the many wars which have been fought in the name of Christianity. Not one of these wars had the approval of our Lord Jesus Christ. Those who fought the wars and claimed they were doing it for the glory of God had perverted the Word of God and were rebelling against the will of God. That hundreds of thousands of people have been killed in these ridiculous religious wars, no student of history will deny. But as inexcusable and evil as these wars were, the numbers killed by professing Christians pale into insignificance when compared to those killed by atheistic, humanistic governments, such as Nazi Germany, Communist Russia, China, Cuba, and similar governments. Communists through the years may have killed as many as 100 million people. I'm not trying to justify religious wars by saying that they kill fewer people than humanistic governments have killed. There is no excuse, absolutely no excuse, for churches to have killed one person. But unbelief has done immeasurably more harm than so-called organized religion. Emmy Bradford's very helpful book, A Worthy Company, The Dramatic Story of the Men Who Founded Our Country, provides a list of men who signed the Constitution. He also indicates their denominational affiliation. The only men of this august company who were deists were Benjamin Franklin from Pennsylvania, James Wilson also from Pennsylvania, and Hugh Williamson from North Carolina. Wilson also claimed to be an Episcopalian, and Williamson was a Presbyterian. All of the other men were Congregationalists, Episcopalians, Dutch Reformed, Presbyterians, Quaker Lutherans, Quaker Episcopalians, Roman Catholic, Methodists, and Lutherans. Whatever your view of these men's religious convictions, you will have to admit that most of these men belong to organized religion. Were they so ignorant or so naive that they could not see that organized religion was a sham and a crutch for weak-minded people? John Eidsmo's book, Christianity and the Constitution, The Faith of Our Founding Fathers, affirms that John Witherspoon was the man who shaped the men who shaped America. Witherspoon made a powerful contribution to America's founding when he became president of the College of New Jersey, now known as Princeton University. While he was president of the College of New Jersey, about 478 men were graduated, approximately 18 students each year. Of those 478 graduates, 114 became preachers, 13 were governors of various states, 3 sat on the United States Supreme Court as judges, 20 were United States senators, 33 were U.S. congressmen. Aaron Burr, Jr. became vice president, and James Madison became president. 1/6 of the men who served as delegates to the Constitutional Convention were also graduates of the College of New Jersey. Pages 81 and 83. Organized religion seems not to have been a sham in those days. Is the letter writer familiar with these facts? If he is not, he simply has not done his homework on the topic he discussed. Most of the men who attended the convention at which our Constitution was adopted did not believe the government and the church should be wedded. They knew the tragedies that had occurred in England because the church and the state were not separated. But they believed morality could not flourish without the influence of religion, primarily organized religion. John Eidsmo quotes these words from George Washington, the father of our country. of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity. Religion and morality are indispensable supports. In vain would that man claim the tribute of patriotism, who should labor to subvert these great pillars of human happiness, these firmest props of the duties of men and citizens. The mere politician, equally with the pious man, ought to respect and cherish them. A volume could not trace all our connections with private and public felicity. Let it simply be asked, where is the security for prosperity, for reputation, for life, if the sense of religious obligation desert the oaths, which are the instrument of investigation in courts of justice? And let us with caution indulge the supposition that morality can be maintained without religion. Whatever may be conceded to the influence of refined education on the minds of peculiar structure, reason, and experience, both forbid us to expect the national morality can prevail in exclusion of religious principle. Page 119. My friends, I am not sitting in judgment on whether these men were all New Testament Christians. But I am saying to you that none of these men, including the deists at the convention, thought of organized religion as being a sham and a crutch for weak-minded people. All of the men apparently believed that morality was not possible without religion. For those men who wrote the Constitution, religion meant the various churches of which they were members. They would not have understood nor endorsed a kind of bland religiosity. By religion they meant the Presbyterian Church, the Episcopal Church, the Methodist Church, the Roman Catholic Church, and similar organized religions. Were those men wrong when they openly and unashamedly endorsed organized religion? Were they right when they argued that morality without religion was not possible? If you want to see where morality without religion leads, read your daily newspaper or watch the evening news on television. My former colleague at Fried Hartman University, Dr. David Leib, wrote his doctor's dissertation on the general topic, Religious versus Secular Ethics. Are these systems of ethics without God? Dr. Leib quotes these words from Leo Tolstoy, the distinguished Russian novelist. The attempts to found a morality apart from religion are like the attempts of children who, wishing to transplant a flower that pleases them, pluck it from the roots that seem to them unpleasing and superfluous, and stick it rootless into the ground. Without religion, there can be no real, sincere morality, just as without roots, there can be no real flower. Page 6. Dr. Leib's research establishes an absolute connection between religion and morality. Without religion, there can be no standard for right and wrong. Without a standard, anything goes. To quote from the book of Judges, everyone does that which is right in his own eyes. Judges 17:6. Are the shootings at Pearl, Mississippi, Jonesboro, Arkansas, Paducah, Kentucky, and other places the result of teachings of organized religion? Are the crimes against life and property directly connected to organized religion, or do they stem from a lack of religious teaching? Have our politicians, businessmen, professional persons, and others committed grievous crimes because of their religious convictions, or because they trampled underfoot those great principles which they were taught at home and at church? Is there any possibility of reasonable moral values without rooting those values in religion? In other words, can men be good without God? Fyodor Dostoevsky was right when he wrote in his novel, Brothers Karamazov, "Without God, everything is permitted." And who is going to teach about God and His will if organized religion does not? Has the correspondent to the Tennessean ever thought about these indisputable truths? My friends, we thank you for listening. May God continue to bless you.